are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents, and students worldwide.
I would like to positively impact the literacy of 100 million people.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Martin McKay, founder and newly appointed CEO of TextHelp. Founded in 1996, TextHelp is an educational technology company that creates online products to aid children that have dyslexia and other learning difficulties. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are what dyslexia actually is and how it affects people, how TextHelp products help children with dyslexia, and why head teachers should invest in literacy improvement tools.
Hello, everyone. This is Ross at Teacher Talk, at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today, I am interviewing Martin McKay, founder and newly appointed CEO at TextHelp. Martin founded TextHelp in 1996 to help people with communication difficulties. He spent his work developing education technology and what started out as a company focused on people with profound speech and dexterity disabilities has become a world leading educational technology company. I'm delighted to have already played around with Ryku in particular. Good morning, Martin. Thank you for joining me. How are you?
Good morning, Ross. I'm great. Thank you. I'm delighted to be on the podcast. Excited to get to talk to you.
Thank you. So thanks for joining us. Before we get into the details of TextHelp and Ryku, can you just give us a little snapshot into your particular own school story, your life at school?
You can hear from my accent, I'm from Northern Ireland. I was brought up on a farm. My primary school was about 150 meters from my house, and I kind of walked there. There was a field, and I kind of walked around the edge of the field in the middle of the school. Really enjoyed it. I had good fun there and was fortunate enough to get to go to grammar school in Northern Ireland, or we still have the 11 plus thing. And I was fortunate enough to get to a great grammar school and got interested in science, and actually went to study, subsequent to that, I went to study microbiology, and I didn't really enjoy looking down a microscope.
Yeah.
And
where did you do that? Did you do that in Northern Ireland as well?
Also in Queen's, yeah. And then I kind of realized that I didn't enjoy looking down a microscope, and I had always been interested in computing. My parents got me a computer when I was 12, and we couldn't do, GCSE or O-level computing at our school, so I taught myself to code when I was 13 or 14, and then did a year of microbiology, didn't really enjoy it, and I decided to switch to computing. So I didn't have the right A-levels for that, so I had to take a year out and go to back to school and did computing and physics, and then went to study computing. And then after computing, I just started the business straight away. So I've never been for a job interview ever. I've just kind of jumped out of education. And
so that was around 1996 when you started TextHelp. Now, give us a kind of synopsis of how it started. What was its influence, I suppose, apart from your degree qualification? What were the drivers?
So we started out in assistive technology, and most people who get into assistive technology have got some personal motivation for doing so, and I'm no different. So when I was young, my dad had a stroke, and he was unable to speak or couldn't communicate, couldn't really understand people. And so at a very young age, I was exposed to this really quite profound inability to communicate. And actually, my family have all got involved in this in some way. I decided to try to make some assistive technology. And so the very first kind of software products that we made were really designed around thinking about how I could help people with strokes or people with severe communication disorders. And we ended up making software then for people with cerebral palsy and motor neuron disease and that sort of thing. The sort of, the tools like Stephen Hawking would have used to do that sort of stuff. And I, by chance, and we, you know, we would, it was popular and relatively successful in the grand scheme of things. I remember being in Scotland at a university. Every university in the UK has an access centre for students with disabilities.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a lady and she said, you know, like not 1% of our students have got cerebral palsy, but I think like 7 or 8% have got dyslexia. I was in art college, so there was like even more, you know, there's kind of higher proportion of dyslexic kids mm-hmm. there. And she said, you know, if you could do something for kids with dyslexia, it would be, so fantastic, and you could reach so many more people.
Give me a kind of period in time. What year was this approximately?
Oh, that would have been, so that would have been about 1995, that would have happened, I think. Right. And then.
So that's when you started to get into schools in some shape or form.
Yeah. And, you know, at the very start, I really didn't understand dyslexia, how to do some research. And these days, if you want to do research, you hop on the internet and it's super easy. You're probably too young to remember CompuServe. There was a thing called CompuServe, which had like a...
I'm probably not too far off your generation. I do remember that too. and, you know, I guess as you started to get into helping school, you know, your point about dyslexia also, you know, it's quite a complex area. You know, Google doesn't necessarily give us all the correct answers either. So there's a lot of myths associated with that. What have you learned since?
So much. It was like 25 years of doing this. So first of all, there's a myth that dyslexic kids aren't bright. They're incredibly bright. They just, you know, just wired up a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Very often, one of the challenges is just kind of verbalizing written words. So when we look at a written word, we typically break it up into, syllables. But when you, that step of breaking a visual word up into syllables, we first of all split it up into visemes, little visual bits, and then we turn the visemes into phonemes, and then we blend those sounds together. Dyslexic people are not very good at that. They're very good at lots of other things, very good at, you know, often, you know, visualization and thinking about things spatially, but that one little thing is difficult for them. But that one little thing tends to be, it's just really important when you're trying to learn by reading. And so if you're trying to read about history or geography or science, it's difficult.
So for teachers listening out there, can you just be very explicit in terms of how text help could help students with dyslexia? What benefits does it have?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, it helps people with reading and writing. So we want to help people understand and help them express their knowledge and be understood. Mm-hmm. The way that we help them understand is whatever's on screen, we read it out loud. So, and as our software reads it out loud with whatever type of voice they want to listen to it with, and it highlights each word as it's read aloud. And that builds up the link between what the word looks like and what the word sounds like. And in the same way that when you're teaching people to read, you may read along and point with your finger, our software reads the software aloud and it highlights each word as it reads it along. And that does the little piece of heavy lifting, converting what the word looks like to the sound. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once they hear it, they can learn it and understand it.
Cool.
So that's easy. That's it.
We also live in a period of time for teachers where we want many teachers want to engage with academic research, and particularly all the myths. So I'm confident that you've explored lots of expertise in psychology and academic research to develop your software. Tell me some of the things that you've been doing to develop your products.
So there's tons of research in this. That dual colored highlighting, when you highlight some text and read it aloud and synchronously highlight the text, that's been shown to elevate comprehension.
Right.
There are loads of studies in that. There's been studies who've used our software and other software. We also have technology for helping kids with writing. And so we have predictive writing. In the same way that when you're using your phone, you type a couple of letters, it'll predict the word for you.
Yeah.
So we do that, but we do it inside Microsoft Word and Google Docs. We did a study with Central Washington University, and they were able to show that kids who use the word predictor wrote twice as much as kids who didn't. And it's common sense. Kids who are dyslexic are afraid to make errors. No one wants to make mistakes. So they write little short words. They write about bat and ball instead of dinosaur or university because they're afraid to try to spell it. But with a word predictor, they can type a couple of letters, will predict the whole word. They know they're not going to make a spelling mistake. And you know, we'll even read the word out. If they say a list of words and they're not sure which one to choose, we can read it out loud or show them a picture of the word. It really gives them the confidence to write.
Yeah, I mean, I used to work with a head teacher who was paralyzed from the neck down, and he used a bit of software that allowed him to voice dictate. And I used to sit fascinated. And I started using it myself to reduce my workload and write blogs and books. And it's pretty much how I use most of my, how I operate day to day. And obviously that emerges onto your mobile phone. I'm sure you'll know that workloads are huge pressure for teachers. I want to kind of talk briefly about, you know, your text help and RyQ and how it can support teachers with their workload in particular. Can you give us any insights, any things?
So teachers are really busy people, and we need to free their time up to teach and not keep them busy with, administrative workload. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've tried to do with RyQ is really take away that administrative workload around the assessment of writing. And so in the UK, teachers have to record spelling, punctuation, and grammar error counts whenever they're assessing writing. And so RyQ just does that straight away. You open up a document, press the RyQ button, and a few seconds later, you know the spelling error count, the grammar error count, the punctuation error count, you know the text maturity. We've got lots of metrics around writing. And so teachers don't have to do any of that, and they can just get to...
It's very funny, as a 46-year-old man, I've been playing around with RyQ, trying to improve my score and all my metrics. I mean, it's incredible what it does for an adult. So I'm sure you've got a lot of insights into its motivational purposes for kids as well.
That's one of the key things, particularly, you know, whenever kids are at home at the moment, or, well, they're back at school now, but very often, you know, I know that the school that my son is going to, in his year, two of the classes are at home because kids have tested positive in the class. And to provide motivation to get kids to continue to write even when they're not in school is important. So we wanted RyQ for students to be the Fitbit of writing. So with a Fitbit, you know, if you're serious about your fitness, or even if you're only kind of mindfully curious, if you wear a Fitbit, it'll tell you your heart rate and how many steps. And you get your little, so you can set a target. And if you've done like 950 steps and you want to get to 1,000, it's really easy to get up and go for a short walk, come back, and you've so like a small amount of discretionary effort can change the number and get you to target. And with RyQ, what we're doing with kids is it just plugs into Google Docs or Microsoft Word, and as they write, it just counts their words, it counts their words, and it counts every time they type a science word or a history word or a geography word. And it gives them points and turns their writing into a game.
My own mental health, my own interest in teacher and pupil mental health. You mentioned the kind of Fitbit or that kind of, it encourages you to kind of keep going and keep going. What kind of safeguarding or considerations are you either have in place or think about putting in place to maybe restrict kids constantly trying to beat the RyQ system, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean. If kids want to throw themselves at writing and write, you know, for 30 minutes a day, I think it's better that they write than, you know, like kind of do the endless scroll through TikTok or, you know. One of the things that we do is, first of all, it's a completely personal thing. So they never get to, you know, there's no like scoreboard where they compete with other kids. And so we don't kind of, it's not designed to be, to give them a target to beat. It's designed to just give them positive encouragement. So, you know, it'll show them a little bar chart. It'll show them if they've been, you know, writing for, you know, 10 days in a row. If they write like 50 science words over a couple of weeks, they'll get like a little science badge.
So I know you can't give us any specific individual stories, but, you know, a kind of maybe a global or maybe a local level in Belfast, you know, with pupils using it, what kind of system patterns are you seeing in terms of how long does the typical 11-year-old use it for as a burst in some?
So that absolutely varies all over the map. So if there's no, you know, there's no such thing as average.
No, I'm sure. Yeah.
There's a really good book called The End of Average, which is worth reading.
Yes, I have read it. Yeah.
There's no such thing as average. If you get a, you know, a group of, year seven kids, there will be a bell curve.
Yeah,
and, there are some kids who are, you know, avid writers with good writing stamina, and they have, you know, they can really conceive of something and then maybe write two sentences at a time, and they'll be quick. You know, they can have like 24 word bursts of writing at a time. Yeah. And there are then lots of other kids who are, you know, who struggle with writing, and, you know, a good burst for them could be six. But the thing about it is, if that kid who has got their average writing burst is six, or the best writing burst they did that week is 12, it's easy for them to just make it 7 or make it 13. We're not trying to get them to compete with the top percentile or the top, you know, quartile group. So it really does vary, but there's really good evidence that shows that the length of a kid's average writing burst correlates with writing quality and writing maturity. So to just encourage kids to build up a little bit of writing stamina every day is going to help them become
if we talk about research and development, you know, particularly with Raikou in particular, you know, what kind of things are you working on in terms of, you know, I'll just throw some things at cognitive load theory, maybe developing specific key terminology that pupils may not have considered whilst they're writing a story in English. Are there any things behind the scenes that you've got in the pipeline?
There's quite a bit of work that we're doing. We're partnering with a guy called Professor Dave Edinburgh at the University of Central Florida, and he has been looking at writing interventions and learning analytics for quite a few years. And obviously one of the things that's like, it's like that end of average, or that there's the if you take an average classroom, there are loads of kids who aren't writing in their first language, and they're going to have a different experience than kids who are writing in their first language. From the cognitive load perspective, some people like to have this little mini dashboard on their screen that kind of gamifies their writing, so that as they write, they can see, you know, that they can kind of keep a track of their writing progress. Mm-hmm. For some people, that's a distraction, and it's better for them to close it. But one of the things that we can see is this is being used at scale. So we can see the kids who are actively paying attention to their learning analytics and see the rate at which their writing improves versus the kids for whom the data is just being collected in the background and they're not really aware. And you can see the rate at which their learning improves. And it's clear from this stage, although we don't have a big enough data set to have a statistically significant result, mm-hmm. but it's absolutely clear that the kids who get involved in the game progress more quickly, and they build up their writing.
I just want to pick up on those words, progress more quickly. I'm going to put my I'm a cynical school leader head on, and I have been with myself. What would you say to people who are listening to school leaders that obviously we've got COVID, which is a significant distraction from our day-to-day work, but you know, when things do return back to normal in the future, what would you say to those leaders that aren't quite sure about investing in text help services and Raikou? What benefits will it bring to the school community, I guess, from a parental perspective, a teacher workload perspective, and your pupils? Yeah. What would be your message?
So that's a really good question. And I would respond to it almost setting text help aside. There's really good research and evidence that shows that time away from school results in learning loss. So if you measure oral reading fluency in kids, you'll see that in the kind of winter, spring, and summer terms, their learning improves. So their number of words correct per minute increases, and then they take 2 months off school, and then they go back to school the next year, and they lose a term's worth of learning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so it takes them their first term to get back to the level of reading that they had at the end of the previous term, and then they have 2 terms of growth, and then they take their summer vacation and they lose a term again. Sure. And this year, because of COVID, they really lost 2 terms. And so there has been a really significant learning loss. And I think an important thing to try to do generally, and I know that the UK government just announced yesterday that this is going to go on, they want to benchmark kids now so that we can see where this year's, you know, kids are in September compared to prior years September, mm-hmm. because there is definitely a learning, you know, there has been learning loss. Kids are further behind than they were.
What were the patterns?
And we need to try to.
What were the patterns from your services throughout lockdown? Was there a dip or an initial spike?
Our stuff has been really, we've been really lucky at TechStop because our stuff is designed to facilitate distance learning. So our oral reading fluency product, the Fluency Tutor product, its usage went up fourfold. Mm-hmm. And our math product, which is like a digital online math thing, a lot of math happens on paper. And when kids are at home, it's really difficult to have a good exchange of kind of math communication on paper. So our digital math thing, it increased in use tenfold. So we've seen a lot of usage, but that's really been driven by this sort of immediate requirement to switch to distance learning.
Approximately how many pupils do you think are using your products?
On a busy day,
put you on a spot.
On a busy day, our Read and Write product will have 10 million users.
Wow.
We've got 32 million people who have used it at some, 32 million lifetime users. But on a busy day, we'll have about 10 million users.
So it's fair to say you're a busy man.
Well, I'm not. I have a really good team, and I'm not busy. Our servers are busy, and our development guys are busy, and our tech support guys are busy. But we're doing a lot. We've got an ambitious workload. We want to continue to get to more people.
Great. Now, I didn't tell you before, but I start to throw quick fire questions at you to try and catch you off guard based on our conversation.
Okay.
So I hope you're ready, because we've kind of reached our kind of 20-minute barrier where, people are driving to their work and starting to log off to the podcast. So to keep everyone engaged, I'm going to see if I can try and catch you out. So let's see. Could you sum up RYQ in 5 words?
Measuring writing achievement.
There you go, we did it 3.
Actually motivating and measuring writing achievement, I would say.
Yeah. Give me a book title that you're reading at the moment.
I've always got loads of books on the go, and so I'm rereading 2 books at the moment. One of them is Sapiens by Yuval Harari, I think I don't know how to pronounce his name. One of them is a physics book. It's called Something Deeply Hidden, and it's by a really good science communicator called Sean Carroll. Okay. It's about gravity and black holes and quantum.
Okay. If I had 24 hours in Belfast, where would we go?
We would go to the Duke of York pub. We would go to Smugglers, Muddler's Club, actually, is a really good restaurant. Up on the Cape Hill for a view, go to the Titanic Center. Oh, Belfast is such a good town to visit. Really, really good.
It is. Well, I was lucky enough to be there in March just before lockdown. What would be your piece of advice for a parent, perhaps, who thinks their child may have dyslexia?
If they think they have dyslexia, maybe go for an assessment. The first thing I would say is don't worry about it, because dyslexia, you just shouldn't let it hold the kid back. It's a strength, and it's a strength and not a weakness, and just encourage the kid to embrace it, and look at people like Richard Branson and Jamie Oliver, and there's hundreds of really high achievers who just don't let it hassle them at all. And I wouldn't worry about it.
What project's on your desk today?
RYQ, my primary focus from a product perspective is the RYQ project. Really the kind of the next phase of that, which is the student side learning analytics, and getting that rolled out internationally.
Once life does return to normal, where's your next holiday destination?
My next holiday destination, when it returns to normal, I want to go to Tanzania.
Okay, fantastic.
I had a trip booked to Tanzania and it got cancelled.
So, right, sorry to hear. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
I think it would be a good idea for you to interview someone from, there's an organization in North America called CAST. It's the Center for Applied Special Technology. Okay. And they're a think tank kind of spun out of Harvard School of Education. And they really look at what educational technology works and what doesn't work from a pedagogy and impact perspective. And we work very closely with them. I'm a huge fan of the organization. I can make a couple of introductions there. Happy to.
If there are any pupils listening, what advice would you give to your 15-year-old self?
What advice would I give to my 15-year-old self? Study a little bit. Study a little bit. I was not a book person. I was, just enjoying myself way too much. Okay. And I should have studied a little bit more.
Yeah. Now, you said earlier that looking down on Microsoft wasn't for you and you got into assistive technology. If assistive technology wasn't your dream job, what would it be?
This probably changes, year to year, but I really have an interest in physics and engineering. One of the things about computing is that you can make all this stuff, but if someone turns the electricity off, it's gone. And to be an engineer, I think, and create something in the physical world that will be there, in a thousand years would be an interesting thing to do.
Okay, fantastic. Couple more. I'm sure you've seen a few stories in the media and politicians about berating teachers and all their hard work they've done through lockdown. Have you got a message for all our wonderful teachers out there that are keeping our schools open?
Well, yes, I have. Thank you, because you are doing an incredible job in incredibly tough circumstances with actually very little guidance from the Department of Education. A lot of this stuff has just been left up to individual schools and individual principals. And I know that teachers really want to teach, and teachers really want to be back in school and teach, and kids want to be back in school. It's such a pressure, I think, on teachers, personally wanting to do it and putting the social pressure to do it. And yet, they've got to feel safe as well. So I would say thank you, teachers. I think you're doing an outstanding job.
Thank you, Martin. My last question, what would you hope to be your legacy?
I would like to positively impact the literacy of 100 million people. I would really like to do a billion people, but I'm already 50.
You're a tenth of the way there. You're doing all right. You're a tenth of the way.
yeah. I think, I think if we double the business twice more, we'll get there. And I tend not to think in terms of linear growth. Trees don't grow that way. Multicellular organisms don't grow that way, so we shouldn't grow that way. So if we double in size twice more, we'll certainly reach more than a million.
Confident you will. Be interested to see how Tech evolves. Martin, it's been a real pleasure to connect with you and unpick your story, founder of Tech's Help. I've been really pleased to play around with RyeQ. So people watching, is a great tool. One, we've already heard, to reduce teacher workload, great for assessing pupils and to keep them motivated and engaged in class, which is good for all of us. And Martin, thank you for your time, and keep up the amazing work.
Ross, thank you very much. It was great to get to talk to you. And next time you're in Belfast, I will take you to the Duke of York.
Yes, and the Smugglers. Sounds great.
Yes, absolutely. Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.